From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, oh yes, those Friday night into Saturday morning open lines. This just in, an airliner with 61 people aboard coming from Dubai crashed early Saturday morning while landing in a southern Russian city. All 55 passengers and 6 crew members have been killed. The plane was a Boeing 737-800 series, pretty new plane, flying for the budget carrier Fly Dubai. They think weather might have had something to do with it. There were wind gusts of 30 to 50 miles an hour out there. Shouldn't be flying or landing in that kind of wind. The main fugitive from the Islamic extremist attacks in Paris in November has been arrested in Belgium's capital, ending a manhunt that stretched on for 4 months. He was shot in the leg, arrested in a major police operation in a Brussels neighborhood. 2 other suspects also in custody. Dr. Jerome Corsi on the line with us here, expert on world events. Jerry, it took 4 months to get this guy, but I'm glad they did.
Well, it's a major coup for the Belgian police, and French authorities want to get this Salah Abdeslam brought back to Paris for prosecution. What it indicates, George, I think, is that there's a larger network of terrorists throughout Europe to protect this fugitive who fled from the November attacks in Paris that killed something like 130 people. At the rock concert, plus a football stadium and cafes in November in Paris. And the terrorist plot ultimately traces back to Syria, where these terrorists originated and began the plotting of the Paris attack. So it's a major coup for Belgian police and the anti-terrorism forces around the world, but it's nowhere near finished, as there remain many of these terrorists who plotted the Paris attack and participated in it in various ways, still at large.
Now, the ISIS tentacle, Jerry, goes everywhere, doesn't it?
It really does, George, and I think it's a frightening prospect for Europe with these refugees from the Middle East pouring into Europe largely without any vetting or checking to see if they are radicals among them, and we know there are. So I don't see any way that this is going to end the terrorism problem in Europe as long as radical Islam continues to penetrate Europe, fleeing out of Syria and other countries where there is such massive violence at the moment.
Okay, Jerry, thank you so much. In Plymouth, Minnesota, a 57-year-old Plymouth man has been arrested after authorities say he took his mother into a bank to make a withdrawal hours before reporting her dead. David John Vanzo is charged with 2 counts of financial exploitation of a vulnerable adult and 1 count each of criminal neglect and attempted theft by swindle. A criminal complaint says Vanzo and his 90-year-old mother went to a bank branch and he withdrew $850 from her account. The complaint says witnesses said she was slumped over in the wheelchair, unresponsive, dragging her feet as Vanzo pushed her chair. She might have already been dead. He's accused of withdrawing about $250,000 from his mother's accounts and a reverse mortgage after taking over her finances. The Pontiff, the Pope, is expanding his social media reach. Starting this weekend, Pope Francis officially joins Instagram, according to Vatican officials. How about that? He's going to use the name Franciscus there. Researchers have successfully activated feelings from lost memories among mice genetically engineered to have early-onset Alzheimer's disease by using a light simulation therapy developed in 2012. Although the therapy called optogenetics can only be used in mice right now, scientists at MIT say the therapy could offer promise for people suffering from early-onset of Alzheimer's, a condition that affects an estimated 200,000 people. Now, how in the world they understood the feelings of mice in order to ascertain whether this works or not is beyond me. Okay, you know that song, Eve of Destruction. I play it a lot on bumper music. And as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, as I was going through my emails, up popped an email from the guy who sings the song, Barry McGuire, simply saying, thanks for playing it. It's good to know somebody remembers it some 50 years later. He left his number, and we've got Barry on the line. Barry, this is really a treat for me. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's great that you called. I really appreciate it.
This song is 50-plus years old and still has the same strength that it had when you did it then.
Well, my mom always told me it's a poor dog that doesn't wag his own tail. So I'm going to wag mine a little bit now. I just think the song is actually more powerful now than it was 50 years ago. I mean, you look at the world, what's going on. I think, I don't have the statistics, but just the gut feeling that there are more people being violently murdered per minute, that there's more unrest, racial unrest, political mistrust, industrial mistrust, Wall Street mistrust. I mean, nobody believes anybody. Everybody's lying. Everybody hates everybody. You know, if anything, it's metastasized, and it's like the human race is a living being. The entire race is one living, the human being. And we have AIDS. We have the inability to differentiate between healthy and unhealthy viruses that are ripping through our society. You know, and you know why AIDS? The AIDS virus has a right to live too. You know. I mean, we've become so open-minded, our brains have fallen out.
Did you ever imagine that song, when you recorded it way back then in the '60s, written by P.F. Sloan, by the way? Did you ever imagine it would still be holding on today?
No, I had no idea. I just knew I liked the song. I liked what it had to say, and you know, we recorded it in one take.
No,
one take.
Really?
Yeah,
it
was just kind of a throwaway thing. We did a couple of songs. The third song sounded like the first song, and the producer, Adler, says, well, let's do something else. And I had the words to Eve in my back pocket. I took them out and smoothed the wrinkles out, hung it on a music stand. The band went through, we only had like 15 minutes left in the session. And so the band went through it twice, and I said, that's good, we got, it's only four chords. And so we recorded it, and there's a place in the song where I go, you can't twist the truth. And the reason I'm going, is because I lost my place in the wrinkly words, you know.
I love it. You're going to be 81 in October, and you're still going strong, my friend.
Oh, well, yeah, I'm still going, not as strong as I used to be. I wish I was, but, you know, the big wheel keeps on turning. Somebody asked me how I was doing the other day. I said, well, I'm just riding the avalanche down the backside of Magic Mountain here, you know, jumping from boulder to boulder.
I love it. I love it. You were born in Oklahoma, right?
Yeah, Oklahoma, 35.
I love it. Barry, you keep in touch with us. Anytime you want to come on, you let me know, okay?
Oh, well, thank you very much. Thank you, man. Just give me a call.
You got it. Barry McGuire, what a great song. I mean, I have played this song not only in my 13 years here on Coast to Coast, but way back when I was the Nighthawk in St. Louis, as bumper music. I mean, it's just one of the best. What a treat to open up that email and see that from him. An emerald green comet will brush past Earth on Monday, followed one day later by a kissing cousin that will swerve closer to the planet, listen to this, folks, than any other comet in nearly 250 years. Wow. Well, I bet we're going to get a lot of UFO reports then. Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center for his weekly update. Boy, are you going to get the calls then, Peter.
Yeah, that's for sure, George. Boy, what an honor to follow Barry McGuire.
How cool is that?
50 years ago, it seems like yesterday to me.
Yeah, me too.
I remember when it was first released, it seems just like yesterday. I was out in California just starting my college education, and wow, pretty exciting to start off a UFO report that way. We have six really interesting reports. We updated our website tonight in preparation for this broadcast, of course, and I've chosen six really interesting reports that
All
I'll
right.
go through briefly here.
Go for it.
This past Sunday, March 13th, two gentlemen in their 40s, they've been lifelong friends. They've been friends since grade school for 37 years. And they were driving from Virginia up to their home in New Hampshire, my old stomping grounds. They were going through Washington, D.C., George. They were on Interstate 295, just crossing a bridge, and suddenly there was an immense flash of light. They think it came from above. It illuminated them so brightly that one of the witnesses says he thinks it was the brightest light he's ever seen in his life. Very interesting report, and that's posted to our website. If people are interested, I recommend they take a look at that report. It's a good one. Couldn't have been an aircraft. They're forbidden in Washington, D.C., with only very few exceptions. Couldn't have been lightning. It was totally silent. Couldn't have been an aircraft. There were actually two flashes, not one. Very interesting report. 2 days later, Adelaide, Australia, gentleman who's quite senior in the defense establishment of Australia, was sitting in his outdoor spa in his backyard. He looked up and he suddenly saw what he thought were three very large birds in triangular formation, except he quickly realized that they couldn't be birds because the leading edge and the trailing edge on the wings were very straight. They weren't flapping. The objects, if it was three objects, they were like equilateral triangles streaked over his head. He estimates roughly 5 to 8 seconds. He said he's never seen anything like it.
Wow.
In his life. Never seen a UFO before.
Love it.
Quite an interesting report and posted to the website. Just 2 days ago, Wednesday of this week, Murfreesboro, Tennessee, a group of police officers were standing outside about 6 or 6:15 in the morning, right after roll call. They were just getting ready to go out on their patrols, and their conversation was suddenly drowned out by an immensely loud sound that passed right over their heads. They saw it for, they estimate, maybe five, or heard it. They didn't see anything. That was the interesting thing. All they sensed was a very loud, rumbling sound, very similar to that report I reported from Vermont. I think it was 2 weeks ago, the family that saw those orange lights that generate a roaring sound as they went overhead. And finally, just in quick sequence, three reports from Southern California last night. From San Ysidro, a guy saw some very unusual lights to the south over Tijuana. A short time later, very similar sighting in Chula Vista. And right after that one, a woman and her family up in Newport Beach in Los Angeles area saw and heard a most peculiar thing. They were astonished by how bright the light was that was above their home, and it was accompanied by a very loud roaring sound. All six of those reports are posted, and another 100 to go along with them. UFOcenter.com, and recommend people take a look at them.
You got it, Peter. Thanks. Great report. Yeah, every week, Peter pops on to tell us what's going on around this planet with UFO reports. A church in London has been fined after a series of noisy 3 a.m. sermons aimed at battling witchcraft woke up neighbors. Kingdom Church holds weekly healing and miracle services aimed at training parishioners to be wise to the wiles of the devil in the early hours of the morning. But the preaching, which goes on during the events, has brought complaints from neighbors too. Up next, Jeff Doherty joining us again. We're going to be talking about exorcisms and demons right here on Coast to Coast AM. Jeffrey Doherty back with us, Bible College graduate who spent more than 20 years as a licensed minister, now during which he discovered that he had incredible gifts of healing and exorcism. He also saw the cracks in the foundation of big-time religion, set out for his own answers, and his ongoing journey has led to the development of the new cosmic knowledge. Now, that is an expanding body of spiritual technologies. He's also an author of several books, including Apostle Paul, Antichrist, Final Message of the Last Apostle, Alien Agenda in the New Testament. Jeffrey, welcome back. Good to have you.
Well, good evening and good morning, George. It's always a privilege to be with you on the show of record in the paranormal and alternative news genre.
The story I had before you came on, there's a group of folks not too happy with a church that is performing late night rituals and sermons and everything else. I guess when you're trying to do exorcism, sometimes it gets kind of loud, doesn't it?
George, I was chuckling as I listened to that. And, you know, it is kind of funny. And sometimes things do get carried out of hand. I never had any the authorities ever called on me because we were doing exorcisms. But we were preaching under a tent one time. And the fire department showed up, and they said that there had been several calls that there were flames on top of this tent, but of course there weren't any. When the fire department got there, they were a little bit stumped. I guess maybe we were just hot that night, George, but I had to chuckle at that report from the church over there in the UK, I guess.
What's new in the world of exorcisms, Jeffrey?
Well, George, every time we come on, you always ask me about it, and we always converse. It just seems like every single day, it's not that things are new, it's just the level of occurrences and the level of interest and the level of reports. It just seems to be skyrocketing. Exorcisms, demons, tragedies of people being killed during exorcisms, and you know, most of it, of course, accidentally, but it just seems, George, that the volume keeps getting turned up, up, up on the amount and number, and unfortunately, sometimes the tragedies that are occurring in all of these exorcisms.
And there's no doubt about the work you've been doing, Jeffrey, I think has helped a lot of people in a lot of different ways. Have you ever been hurt doing an exorcism?
You know, that's an interesting question, George. And people always ask me, aren't you afraid when you're doing this? Don't you ever worry about what's going to happen? Have you ever been hurt? And, you know, as I, you know, knock on my head, knock on wood, I never have been hurt. I've never been even really attacked. And it's funny, George, that you ask that, because even before I was in the professional ministry, quote unquote, I was in the Air Force. And even though I meant to go to Bible college, ended up in the Air Force, but I was still a big Bible thumper, even though I wasn't in Bible college. And I was in the Air Force, and we'd go over and have dinner at one of my buddy's house. And his wife, unbeknownst to me, was a practitioner of, guess what we would call, dark magic.
Uh-huh.
She didn't like me, understandably, because I was a big mouth and a hot shot and, you know, a bodybuilder to boot, so I was kind of obnoxious. And she was doing all sorts of black magic spells towards me. I would find these little poppets in my personal belongings. I'd find blood and strange things on the doors. But it never took, and it really bothered her. She blew up one day and said, how come my best stuff never works on you? So, George, I don't know how or why, but I am just very thankful to, you know, the universe and to the divine that I seem to have some type of a protection. So I've never been hurt. And have never had any anything of that nature. And I'm very thankful to the divine for that.
She was throwing everything she had at you, Jeffrey, wasn't she?
She was. I mean, when you start getting desperate enough to bleed your own blood, as they said in the movie, that just shows you, George, how obnoxious I was. You can't blame the poor lady.
When you say you were obnoxious, I mean, you've obviously changed. You're a different kind of guy now. I mean, every time you're on this program, everybody loves you. I mean, were you really that way?
George, I appreciate you saying that, and that really means a lot to me, because, George, I was even worse than that. I mean, if you think about the guy that's always preaching at you, always judging you, always yelling and screaming about, you know what's right, and everything is, I was that guy, George. I was obnoxious. I was in your face. And, you know, I was 20 years old or something, 21 years old, thought I knew everything, of course. And to be honest with you, George, it was probably worse than that. It was terrible.
Well, you pulled yourself out of it, that's for sure. And and that's a good thing.
Well, thank you. I don't think I did. I think, you know, it was just a life teaching me, and, of course, having a divine assistance. And I think if we all will just listen, the path's always laid out to us, the path's always given, if we can just shut our mouths long enough and see the right path and just have the sense to walk it. So I give myself very little credit, but I'm so glad I'm not that guy anymore, George.
Super. Jeffrey, we're going to take this quick break, then we're going to come back and really talk deeply about demons, how you can cast them out, and it's my feeling that they seem to be more prevalent than ever. We'll get your take on that as well. Jeffrey Doherty with us for a couple hours. His website is his name. It's linked up at coasttocoastam.com to make it really easy for you. And, of course, coasttocoastam.com, you should look at every day before the show to get a great idea about what the guest is going to talk about and some of the things we're going to do right here on Coast to Coast AM. And it's just fantastic. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Coast, Jeffrey Doherty with us here as we talk about exorcisms and demons. And Jeffrey, are there different techniques to get rid of different kinds of demons, or is it all the same?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I don't think I've really pondered that too much. I think at the beginning, I was successful just because of the power of my intention, and just because I was so much of a bull in a china shop, and I just kind of did what I saw other people do, and kind of followed their lead. And I've been doing this about 30 years now, and now I've gotten to the place where I think I'm a little less obtuse in my approach, and certainly a lot more effective. But I don't George, I don't think I've ever, when it comes to demons, and here's where we get into, talking about, what's what. When it comes to demons, or when it comes to spirits that are harassing or oppressing people, I think that at least I've been successful in treating them pretty much in one fashion. Now, if we're talking about spirits maybe that are not malevolent, that are trapped, for the lack of a better word, between here and where they are ultimately supposed to go, that's definitely a different way to handle and to react. And I guess you treat things a little bit different depending upon their intention. If they're mean, they're nasty, if they're attacking, you take one type of a tact with them. If they're just there and they're more just irritating, they're not really malevolent, then you might take another tact with them. I mean, there's a growing body of people, and I think this is great, within the paranormal realm. We never ever asked before, what about the demons once they're gone? We just were glad they were gone. Now there's actually people starting to think, well, what about these spirits? I mean, they are actually beings too. Shouldn't we be trying to help them? And I think the intent and the actions of the entity itself drives a little bit the way that we're going to work with them. If they're just mean and nasty, we're going to evict them, and if necessary, if they don't want to stay away, then we'll take them to a place where they're not able to leave anymore. On the other hand, if it's a spirit that isn't really bothering anybody, it's not really messing with anybody, I'm of the opinion that if they're not bothering anybody, we can just leave them sometimes where they are, if you're talking about a house or a place that people aren't being harassed in. Does that make sense?
It does. And how do they get into these demons? How do they get into an individual? How do they get into a house?
That's a great question, George. And that's, kind of the million-dollar question. But sometimes I get hollered at. People say, you always say, George, that's a great question, but they are
great questions.
But there's different ways. I mean, what I've seen mostly, and I think the traditional view is, you're opening yourself up to something, you're doing something wrong, you've got a chink in your armor, so to speak, and that certainly does happen. And that's something that we do need to address and deal with. Other times, though, George, I believe we deal with generational-type spirits that are coming back to us, from our family generations. And I know this is a little controversial, but even from our perhaps prior incarnations. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing now that we really are starting to be more cognizant of is, according to the law of attraction, we always think about, everybody thinks about thinking about money and getting rich, but what we don't sometimes stop to think is, when we put out intention and feelings like, oh, I'm so lonely, I'm so lonely, I'm so lonely, I'm so lonely, you're going to draw spiritual entities to you that feed on that loneliness, that share that loneliness. And sometimes you find yourself feeling so lonely out of all proportion to the situation you're in, and many times, what you've done, perhaps unwittingly, is drawn in a lot of, what we would call unbalanced energy that's not really your loneliness, but you've just drawn it to you, and you're like pushing a snowball at the top of the mountain, and we have to learn to get ourselves out of that before it rolls too far downhill.
Have you ever met a demon you didn't like?
I've never met one I liked, George.
Yeah.
They're all rather bothersome, but I've met... I just met one recently, one of the most recent, actually the most recent next to most recent dealing I've had. That, and you know, I thought about you, believe it or not, when I was dealing with this, because we've talked many times about it, and it seems like this was this particular entity was a shadow man, and it seems like the shadow man, at least this one, George, he was kind of evolved. He was changing. He wasn't like your classic shadow man, and I've dealt with shadow men over 30 years, and I've never seen a shadow man show any ability to evolve tactically or appearance-wise. And yet, George, this one was strategically, tactically brilliant and had actually altered his physical appearance from a standard shadow man to look more like a departed relative of this lady whose house he was in. And she was not wanting me to evict him because she felt he was protecting her. So there's a lot of things happening, George. You know, people like you are doing a lot of great work getting the knowledge out. And I think there's some evolution and some maturation, if you will, among the entities themselves, maybe taking some defensive actions.
Are some of these demons, Jeffrey, tricksters? I mean, do they try to manipulate and trick you?
I think they all try to manipulate and trick us. I think some of them do it just for fun, just as, you know, just as a gag in a classic trickster type scenario from mythology and, you know, other religions that we know of. But I think mainly, George, what is driving, there's two things that are driving these entities. And one, people will think I'm totally crazy, but Sir Isaac Newton is actually the one that kind of pioneered this train of thought. And then there's, you know, another reason. Number one is the reason that they are coming to people is because they're really unbalanced energy that person themselves has unbalanced at some point in time, either prior in this life, if that's your theology and comfort level, or even in other past incarnations, if you can allow yourself to go there. And like a salmon, that unbalanced energy that you unbalanced has to come back to you. It's driven to come back to you by divine imperative. And many times they have enough time, George, to attract other types of energy to themselves and almost coalesce, and really do coalesce sometimes into what appears to be sentient entities. And we're really dealing with those type of spirits 99.9% of the time, George. The true, real, you know, interdimensional, fallen angel, you know, whatever type of a scenario you like to believe they are. I think that's very, very rare. It's like myself. I'm a scuba diver. I dove for a week with great white sharks. I was with some folks from National Geographic. I can tell you how to tell if a great white shark's going to attack, how to defend yourself, what to do. But that information is worthless to most of your listeners because they're never going to be in the water with a great white shark.
Let's hope not.
Yeah, let's hope not, for sure.
My
but
gosh.
Amazingly, George, in a week diving with them, 4 or 5 hours a day, only maybe 15 minutes total did I get the idea I was in trouble. They actually are more curious. But there are interests in this world that want us to be afraid of demons because they want us to come to them as the only source of hope, and they hold that as a great deal of power and control over us. But the reality is that the vast majority of what we face aren't really demons, quote unquote. It's just unbalanced energy that we've unbalanced, and it's actually pretty easy to balance that. And then you do have the other types, which would be, you know, some type of, you know, interdimensional or actual fallen angel type entities. And then of course you have sometimes, as we've talked about, those spirits that aren't really demons, but they're, you know, spirits of people, as much as I can tell, that are caught somewhere between here and where they want to go. And I have a great story about that if we have time to share that.
We sure do. Go ahead. No, you can do it now.
I've always, you know, for 30 years, George, I've been dealing with other people's, you know, business, other people's laundry, so to speak.
Yeah.
I had never dealt with any type of a past relative of my own or even somebody that I knew. And very recently, my uncle died, and we were very close. And he was, you know, fighting a physical battle, and it's one that he ultimately lost. But, I mean, this man had a great life, Green Beret in Vietnam, firefighter, retired from the United States Army, you know, a great patriot, servant of his country. But he passed. And I knew from my experience that many times when people pass that day, or the sooner you can reach out to them after they've passed, the easier they are to contact. So you know, I was in my daily meditations and I just reached out to him, and almost instantaneously, George, he was there, and I had my eyes closed, but I could see him as clearly as if someone walked into this room right now. And he was at his peak of health. He was laughing. He was joking. And I made the joke to him, you know, you're dead and you've never looked better. And he laughed. I said, yes, that's the case. And, you know, I was enjoying time with him. But then I said, hey, his name was Joe. I said, hey, Joe, are Nanny and Granddaddy around? Those were his mom and dad, my maternal grandparents. He said, no, they've been gone a long time. And then the idea came to me, George, that said, to ask him, are there any of our other relatives there? And he looked around and he goes, whoa, come over here, boy. And comes up to him, my cousin, whose name was Jason, a saint of a guy, had some mental and physical challenges. And he passed, George, like 4 or 5 years ago. And he was there caught, if you will, between here and there. And he came up and was talking with Joe, and I was talking with him. We were kind of interacting, and we're able to get him to some type of an understanding where Joe finally said, he always called me uncle. He never called me, he called me nephew. I called him uncle. He said, well, nephew, we got to go. And they went on, George, right to their place. And, you know, Jason had been there for several years, and I woke up, George, it seemed like it was 5 minutes. It was almost an hour. I was crying tears, but I mean, here was a true picture of working with someone. And I've found in the Bible, and I know this is going to upset a few people, but Yeshua actually made it part of his work to go into the spirit realm and talk to people that had died and were trapped because of misunderstandings from the religion they were taught. And Peter, George, the Apostle Peter, says that the apostles also did the same thing. So what a challenge to us, George, and what a great opportunity that, you know, how selfish can it be only to help our own past loved ones? But there's a whole mission field, if you will, in the spiritual realm. I'm a little excited about that. I don't mean to come off too hard, but that's eye-opening to me.
Tell me a little bit about Confessions of an Exorcist, one of your new works.
Confessions of an Exorcist is a book I just finished, and it's interesting. I was going to call it 30 Years an Exorcist, but you know, as I was writing down stories, and there's been some great stories and some interesting stories, I was struck by the fact that, George, how sad would it be if they were just stories for around a campfire or something? And we really morphed into the lessons from those stories and the challenges and the responsibilities and the opportunities for us as new vistas of spirituality open up. And it became more of just 30 years an exorcist, hey, look at me, I've done great things, to Confessions of an Exorcist, things that we've done, you know, this about me, things that I've done, mistakes I've made, lessons I've learned, challenges that I now understand, and responsibilities that I never knew we had as workers in exorcism or entity cleansing. And instead of just a hey, look at me memoir, it's really a look at some interesting stories, but more importantly, taking the lessons from those stories and a kind of a new look at the very nature of demons and the whole genre of exorcism itself. So it's really become more of a confessional almost, and of a call to action. And I think it may be the best work I've ever done, George.
And when you say you made mistakes, as an exorcist or as a person?
Well, plenty of both, I can guarantee you. But specifically in the book, I'm talking about as an exorcist, just to give you a good idea. And George, I have a hard time hearing the bumper music, so if you just tell me when we're going to break, I don't always mean to have you cut me off. I'm not trying to be rude.
That's okay. No, that's okay.
And when I was a young evangelist, there's a couple of stories that illustrate this. I was called in the middle of the night. I'm in Oregon. It's cold. I didn't want to go, but my buddy was having a hard time getting this poor lady free of a demon. So I drove over there, told my wife, this is how arrogant I was, I'll be back in less than an hour. So we went up there, and she lived in a building that had three floors, and it was one of those type of buildings that used to be a warehouse that converted to real nice lofts. And I walk into the bottom floor is where she lived, and the boiler, of course, is in the basement, and the heat came up through a grate that went up through, you know, to all three floors. So her being on the bottom floor, you know, she had that heat right there. Of course, there was a thermostat, so it could be adjusted. But this poor woman, was cranking her heat up to the very height and laying on these grates, George. She was compelled by the spirit to lay on this heating grate, and it was literally cooking and burning her flesh.
Jeez.
And this entity was compelling her to do that, and I walked in. It's late. I'm tired. I'm irritated. So I see this, and I just lay into this demon, and I'm rebuking it and fighting it. And sure enough, about 45 minutes later, I see it leave her. I see her face clear. Her countenance clears, and almost a smile. And then she looks around very frightened and says, "Where's my friend?" And boom, that spirit's right back into her, George. And the lesson I learned there was, and I went, you know, Yeshua taught me this lesson, is that when you are going to cast a demon out of a person, you have to make sure that they want the demon gone, that they want the spirit gone. Because if you don't, not only do you put them through a lot of pain and suffering, not only do you do a lot of work yourself, not only do you expose yourself to potential harm, as you mentioned earlier, but Yeshua taught us that when a demon goes out of a person, it actually goes and, you know, Yeshua's being colorful, it walks around through desert places, but then it'll go back and see if it can get back to that same place, and it brings back seven more spirits worse than itself. And George, that word seven in the original language might mean seven, it might mean 70, or it might even mean 70 times seven. So whatever it means, if you don't ask that person if they want to be free, and you let your ego or your irritation take over, and you cast a demon out, and they want it back, when it comes back, they're in much worse position than they were before. And that's one of the biggest lessons I learned, was you've got to ask people, else you're doing a disservice to everyone involved.
Jeffrey, can you turn around a demon, or once they're a demon, always a demon?
You know, George, I think that's the question of the age, and I think that's one of our new calls and new responsibilities as spiritual workers. I believe that 99.9% of these things that we deal with as individuals on a regular basis, not talking about exorcists, not talking about workers of paranormal, but, you know, just us regular people that go about our lives, when we're bothered by spirits, again, they're not great white sharks. 99.9% of the time, it's just unbalanced energy that we ourselves have created, either prior in our life or in past lives. And George, every single time that can be corrected very, very simply, very, very easily. So yes, I used to call that demonic regeneration. I thought, oh, these are demons, we're regenerating. But when I started reading Newton's works and realized it's just energy that we're rebalancing. So yes, most of the time we can regenerate, recalibrate, or, as I don't know if you would call it save, but you can turn around, as you said, what we perceive to be as demons. And I think even those entities that are malevolent, or, you know, that actually really are not just our unbalanced energy, but our bad spirits, I think they're probably unbalanced energy from maybe the Elohim or the divine. And this is all in the book, it sounds crazy, but maybe the Elohim haven't dealt with their own unbalanced energy yet, because they're waiting for those of us that were created in their image to get back into the family, so that everything can be done justly, righteously, and in order.
We're going to talk more with Jeffrey Doherty when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM, but we'll also open up the phone lines, giving you an opportunity to, one, ask him a question, or two, talk about the some demonic story that might have affected you or your family as well. So stick around for Coast to Coast AM, and then later on tonight, of course, Friday night into Saturday morning, open lines on Coast to Coast AM.